Everyone, welcome back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com, Yahoo Sports on Crown Network. I'm Dan Canobio. He is Chris Algieri, fresh off a red eye from Los Angeles, called 10-plus fights last night. He's a warrior. He is the warrior spirit. He has the Filip Hrgović stamina, Chris Algieri. What did we watch this weekend? Filip Hrgović upsets Moses Atama, one of the crazier heavyweight fights you will ever see. Just unbelievable stuff. We'll break it all down. We'll obviously talk about the Pro Box card. We'll talk about the Michaela Mayer, Chantel Cameron fight. A lot to get to on this very, very busy episode. Chris, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm wearing the sunglasses, not because I'm a cool guy, but because red eyes are called red eyes for a reason. My eyes are red. I am very tired. Very, very tired.
You're a savage for red eye.
I slept exactly 0 hours last night. I normally sleep on red eyes. This one, I don't know. I think I was amped up from the fight. I didn't know if I was going to make the fight because it was kind of a last minute thing. I was like, oh, we finished early. I'm like, LA traffic. I think I can make it. So me, and I'm by the seat of my pants when I fly, when I travel. Paulie Malignaggi thinks I'm absolutely out of my mind. He needs to be at the airport like 2 hours. Yeah, he thinks he needs to be at the airport 2 hours before. I'm like, nah. I'm like, dude, I want to walk. I want to land on the curb. I want to walk in, go through security, walk to my gate, step on my plane. I don't want to wait at all. I don't want to sit down. I don't want to get a drink. I don't want to have enough time to even buy a bottle of water. I want to just walk on the damn plane. I don't want to be in the airport. I hate being in airports.
No, airports are horrible.
So I was like, all right, I think I can make it. So I made it. And I don't know. Maybe I was amped up from obviously the Pro Box card, which was sick. Amped up from the Moses Atama fight, upset, and then just getting there. I don't know. I was on the plane. I was like, I just don't want to sleep. So I just watched all the fights all night long. So which just got me real prepared for this show today.
You told me like, hey, I might get the red eye, but I did not hear from you after the Pro Box. So I don't know if you got it or not. So I started doing the math in my head. Like, all right, it's the card ended at like 11:30-ish. Eastern. Okay, that's 8:30 Pacific. So that means maybe he can get on like a 10 p.m. And then I said, all right, that's a 5-hour flight. So that's like 2 in the morning. And then you take away 3 hours. I was like, I don't know where he is right now in the morning.
I would have never made it 10. I would have never made it 10 p.m. It was an 11:45 flight, 11:30 flight. And it was boarding at 10:50. And I was like, I literally arrived at the airport. By the time I got through security, it was 3 minutes to boarding.
You better get your rest, dude. You better get your rest because the calling fights it's strenuous on the throat, and then it goes down to your lungs. Next thing you know, you have a week long flu like I did. So please, Manuka honey. Yeah,
my throat is definitely cooked. I'm sure everyone listening can tell. Maybe I'll do a little pho tonight, a little Vietnamese pho, bring my throat back.
Come on, man. Take care. You're getting older now. Yeah, I need you to take care of yourself. You good?
I'm good. I'm great.
Glad you're feeling good, Chris. Let's talk about Moses Atama, Filip Hrgović. Hrgović stops Atama in the ninth round. An unbelievable fight where Atama just shut off. His body shut off. Hrgović ate every single punch. It was an unbelievable war of attrition. One of the strangest fights I've ever seen. I've never seen a fighter turn off like Atama did. I've seen fighters take punishment like Hrgović did, but usually not come out on top. Usually we're saying, wow, tough luck loser. That guy's tough as nails. He'll be back, Hrgović. I've never seen anything like this because Atama was winning every minute of the fight. He was up on all scorecards. He was up on mine. He was up on Frampton's. I don't have the official scorecards in front of me. I probably should, but I'm sure he was up wide on all of those. He looked spectacular for the first 6-7 rounds. And he falls off an absolute cliff. You watch the fight. I gotta know what you thought about that. Have you ever seen a fighter shut off like that? Have you ever seen a fighter drastically lose everything like that in a big-time prize fight?
That was the most dramatic fall off a cliff I've ever seen at a high level. And listen, Hrgović said himself, he was like, I lost every round. I was losing. He was like, Lewis, lost a round. Lost
I
round,
love lost it. He's round, the, his interviews round. Are amazing.
He's awesome. He's really awesome. Croatians are awesome. We had a Croatian on our card too, Luka Plantek. They're just, fun people. Tough people, obviously. But yeah, he knew what it was, and I think he knew that he was immediately. He looked very uncomfortable early on. He was like, "Wow, this guy's way faster than even they said." And Atama looked awesome, really awesome. He looked really, really good, but he was redlining the entire time. When you don't have the experience to be able to slow and control pace, you pay for it. 12 rounds is a long time, dude. 12 rounds is a real long time.
Especially when you've never been there.
Nah, yeah, of course. But if you're 6'4", 250, and you're an explosive athlete, 12 rounds is an absolute nightmare. It's a marathon. And that was one of the questions. Again, I'm going to go back to Mike Tyson because everyone's making the
no, that clip that, Mike that Tyson. Clip that we posted with you is looking real good. Because you said my main thing is about the resistance. My main thing is about, like, we saw Tyson at this level. We saw Tyson push, go 10 at least.
Mitch Green, Bone Crushers, he was in fights with big guys who were tough. One thing about Mike, we found out he actually always had a good gas tank. I mean, early on. Like, he trained really, really, really hard, and he was very explosive throughout. So, like, the gas tank was there. And now, so you're talking about, like, my clip aging well. How about the clip of Ergovich, of Atalma explaining that I don't do any more work than I need to, essentially, saying, like, I don't need to go 12 rounds. Like, no, we're going to get paid for overtime.
What? I wish I would have seen that beforehand. Like, that, these things come on Earth afterwards, and shout out to the Twitter account that did post that. But to say that you never sparred 12 rounds?
I've sparred
zero rounds in my life, but I've heard enough from fighters that you spar more. Like, you spar 15, 20 rounds, so 12 feels like a walk in the park. To never spar more than 12, I think, from at least my standpoint, is absolutely absurd. How insane is that of a statement to make, or how insane is that a world championship fighter had never sparred 12 rounds?
Well, first of all, he's not a world championship fighter. He was not a world championship fighter. He's still not a world championship. No, he wasn't. And
that's something we'll talk about too.
He was exposed. He didn't really earn this position, and that's something that, like, I saw this as a very slippery slope. I'm like, he's not really ready for this kind of fight, but he's probably so talented he'll get through it. But, like, then I kept mentioning, next is Frank Sanchez. I'm like, that's an even tougher step up. Like, I don't. You know, getting past Ergovich, which we always, like, kind of pumped the brakes. Like, this is not an easy fight. We essentially picked him, of course. Eventually picked him. But this was never a comfortable pick for me. And especially when they threw the title on it, I'm like, all right, now we're going to 12. Let me tell you this.
Things went downhill fast. Like, things fast. Like, really picked up. And Batama was probably, like, confident guy, but was probably thinking in his mind, like, oh my god, I'm fighting Hergovic now. Oh shit, now the heavyweight title's on the line. Oh shit, I gotta fight Frank Sanchez next. Oh shit, I never sparred 12 rounds. Oh shit, I'm 21.
I don't think any of that went in his head. I think he went, I'm gonna smoke this MF-er like I do everybody else because I'm that guy. I'm that
son of a bitch.
I think so. So, but I'm gonna tell you this, and this from a fighter standpoint, when we're talking about the 12 rounds, we're talking about a guy who didn't want to do 12 because he was like, I don't need to do 12. That shows me a fundamental flaw in his thinking. Because fighters, in terms of their preparation, the scariest thing in the world is to be in front of a professional puncher, killer, fighter, boxer, and you're tired. There's nothing scarier in the world. You do extra. You're better off being overtrained than undertrained. Yeah. Bro, the fear of being in that, and that's exactly what broke Atalma. The fear. He was in a place he had never been. He was drowning. He was drowning and he quit. He completely fell off a cliff. He had never been there. He had never been pushed. He wasn't pushing the gym. He wasn't pushing the fight. And when you look at his career, you're like, all right, he wasn't pushing a fight because he's so damn good. But then you hear that interview, and it's like, we weren't pushing the gym either. Like, you have never been to that moment. You never got over that. We all every Friday goes to that. We're like, all right, I'm done. I'm beaten. I'm ready. And then you get over it, and you're like, oh no, I didn't need to quit. After the Pacquiao fight, everyone's like, oh, how'd you not quit? And I'm like, I never learned how to quit. I don't know how to quit. Like, I've been pushed, and I've always gotten over it. Like, I got over it that night too. Like, I got dropped a bunch of times. I got my ass kicked. But, like, no, the quitting was never even an option. I was never overwhelmed to the point where I was like, oh, I need to get out of here. Atalma had never been there. He'd never seen it in the gym. Whereas a guy like me, who was always terrified of being scared, of being tired in front of a fighter, I mean, I always did the extra work. And Atalma was the opposite.
So obviously, like, he was exhausted. There's no doubt about it. But the fifth round, his mouth was wide open. I've seen a ton of fighters have that problem. You just brilliantly described what it feels like to be in there with a puncher and you're tired. I've seen fighters' legs give out. But never like that. Never, like, visibly almost fell over backwards.
Woozy. He was, like, woozy. Like,
whoa. So obviously, we also don't have, like, an official statement yet. I know he has been discharged from the hospital.
I'm going to push back on that because we have seen that. Vladimir Klitschko, Lamont Brewster.
I know, and it turned Klitschko into the most boring heavyweight fighter of the last 10 years. Get to that in a second.
Do you remember him? Do you remember him face planting in that fight? Yes.
And then so, he hires Emmanuel Stewart, and he becomes a jab first. 10 years of jab, jab, jab. We'll see what happens with Atamba, but I want to get to this point here. If he says that he's fine, like we said, there was like a leg injury. I didn't see a leg injury. There's no like injuries where he's still in the hospital. He's been discharged from the hospital. He's home. So if it's not like a physical ailment, like, oh, his ACL was torn or, you know, broken hand or something like that. And you said there's a lot of nerves involved. Also, there's never been there plus exhaustion. Was it something like that where his body just turned off to the, like, was it nerves on top of the fact that he was exhausted as well? In your estimation?
We'll never know, but I'm going to say there's actually another example of this. Zhile Zhang, when he fought in Miami.
Well, he just got dehydrated.
Right. But like these big guys, again, we talked about this on the show last time. You didn't realize how big Moses is. Like he's 6'4", 250.
Big boy.
These big guys, and especially him, he's explosive. He's a special kind of athlete. He's explosive. For him to be in a corner and just drinking water, like basketball players don't just drink water. They're big, explosive athletes. They have Gatorade. They get to sit down. They get to relax. This is kind of bullshit.
You guys should be allowed to have Gatorade.
Oh, it's such bullshit. From a nutrition standpoint, what metabolically.
You can't have Gatorade. Bro,
metabolically, the fact. Dude, you're not allowed Gatorade in the back in New York. I don't know how it is in a lot of other states and other countries. Like, once you step over the threshold into the venue, it is water and it's provided by them. That is it. That's all you get for two hours.
I kind of knew that, but now thinking about it, that's absolutely absurd.
Bonkers. Bonkers. I used to come late and I used to walk over the threshold having a carbohydrate, like, 100 grams of carbohydrate, literally. Boom. I'm like, I'm not going in there underfueled. And then you got a guy who's 250 and he's 6'4 and he's athletic and he's explosive the way Moses is. He can't have any sugar before he steps in the ring. It's crazy.
That's nuts. I think both guys should be. I mean, it's an even playing field. It's Gatorade, guys. It's Gatorade. Anyway,
it's a sports drink. Yeah.
I think Atamo, a lot of things. Obviously, I just rewatched it again this morning. His mouth was open. First of all, he was throwing everything 100 miles an hour. First four rounds, he looked spectacular, counter-punching.
Yep.
The jab was good when he threw it, but the right hook at the southpaw stance, the counter-punching, the body work, he was throwing lead hooks. He was throwing 1-2. He had everything going, upstairs, downstairs. But in hindsight, when I watched it the second time around, I'm like, damn, he is throwing everything 100 miles an hour.
And he's redlining.
Exactly. Like you said earlier, he is the prototypical power pitcher in baseball that throws everything 101 miles an hour. No changeups, no curves, no off speed, everything hard. By the fifth round, his mouth is open. He's breathing heavy. I noticed that the first time watch. Obviously, Hergovich is eating everything, eating uppercuts, eating everything, bleeding, just still coming forward, landing some stuff here and there. I think at Talma, a lot of things happened here. I think he was like, oh my God, I can't get this guy out of here. Everyone else has been evaporated already in my career. Oh my God, I'm going to lose. He starts panicking. There's so much invested in me. There's so many people thinking I'm going to win. There's so much for me in the future. That, on top of the fact being extremely exhausted, also did get hit with a lot of shots. I think the eighth round, he emptied the clip and they went brawling at the end of the eighth round. He got hit with a lot of clean shots.
He really didn't get hit till the seventh round.
Right.
I was really impressed with his defense. He got hit very little. Very, very little.
He did not get hit with much until about the seventh or eighth round. But I think it was all of those things, all those ingredients where it was nerves, it was the human element, it was exhaustion, it was never being there, it was also getting hit. Hergovich did do a good job of laying, using his bigger frame on top of him and wearing him down. That he just, you're human. He just gave out. And we watched it right in front of our eyes. He literally shut off. And you have to keep that in mind. The intangibles, the human element. We talked all week about how he's so much faster. He's got the power edge. He's got every edge physically. and everything we've seen from Atalma over the short time he's been a pro is he has every punch in the book. He's got everything going for him, but we just don't know about the X factor. We don't know about the intangibles. We don't know about his gas tank. We don't know about his endurance. We don't know about his resistance. Those are big parts of boxing, especially heavyweight boxing. And we watched it in front of our eyes. That's what the beauty of boxing. You have to go in there and take it. You have to go in there and do it. And he came up short.
Dan, and this is a perfect segue into what we were talking about earlier, the championship. When you say like he's human in there, I throw that shit out the window. It takes superhuman performances to be a champion. My title-winning effort was superhuman. I wasn't supposed to win that fight. I wasn't supposed to get through what I got through. I was supposed to fold. I was supposed to have all those things you just said. Didn't happen. Look at Ergovic. He was supposed to get pasted. He was supposed to get stopped. He was supposed to all these different things. And look, he did not look comfortable early in that fight. He was looking around like, what the hell is this guy in front of
me? He was getting hit with everything. Bing,
bing, bing, yeah, but even his reactions, he was like, he looked worried. Even Ergovic, tough as he is, he was like, shit. And he said it afterwards. He was like, too. Yeah, he said he was. Afterwards, he goes, he's the best I've been in the ring with. He's like, he just wasn't ready. And I was so right on the money. So when you talk about the human element, fuck that, dude. That's why you're not championship level. It takes superhuman efforts to be a champion.
He was human.
He is human.
He is human. That's what I mean.
But we're all human. But you have to be able to put up superhuman efforts,
right,
to be a champion.
The extra, what you getting up off the canvas, you taking a knee. Wasso, why didn't he take a knee? We always talk about this a lot.
He didn't even hold. He didn't know enough to hold.
Bro,
there was no ability. He's never had the ability, because he never needed to. He's never had the ability to control or corral an opponent. No ability to rest, take a walk, use your jab, take a round off. Have you ever seen Atalma take a round off? Never. Bro, he was already so far ahead in the seventh round. If he would have fell off and then just made a super boring fight and lost those five rounds, and then we get a 7-5+1, performance. We're like, whatever. You won a world title against a tough guy. You got tested. Good for you. No. Completely no
side of that. The other side is that is utter disaster. Mayday. Mayday. He was literally mayday. It was
nosedive.
He was a pilot and he was hitting the mayday button as he was laying up against those ropes. Now, to that point with the why didn't he box? Why didn't he take a round off? Ben Davison is getting a lot of flack today. I think this guy always does. You're your trainer. When you win, you're the man. When you lose, everyone's pointing fingers at him. I didn't see corners, because it's the one thing about the zone that I absolutely cannot stand is that they don't show corner work, or they don't show it enough. They don't show you what's going on in the corner. They go immediately to a commercial, or they go immediately to some other nonsense.
Talking I want to see
the corners. What did Ben Davison tell him around the fifth or sixth round? What did he tell him after the seventh round when things were starting to shift? What did he tell him after the eighth round where it was clear that he punched himself out towards the end of that round, and that round ended with him getting cracked? I would like to know what Ben Davison told him in the eighth round, because if he told him, hey, you got to start using your jab, you got to box more, then, okay, let's get off his back a little bit. If he told him that and Atalma didn't listen, then that's on the fighter. If he didn't tell him that at all, then Davison has a lot of explaining to do, and he might not be his trainer moving forward. I just can't believe that there wasn't any talk in that corner about, okay, you're up massively. How about let's try something else here? Let's move out of the way. Let's not throw 100-mile-an-hour fastball every time. Let's box a little bit.
I'm going to one-up that. If you didn't do it in the gym, you can't tell the guy to do it on fight night.
That's a good point.
So if you didn't do it in the gym, if you haven't been like, hey, remember all those rounds we worked just using the jab and circling to the weak side? Remember when we were in that sparring session with, I don't know, whoever, Marius Wach, and we spent six rounds working the jab and sliding out to the right? Working the jab, sliding out
to
the right.
Let's do that this round.
Let's do that. My coach, rest in peace, Tim Lane, he was a world kickboxing champion, brought me to my first world title. Got a lot of flack, obviously, in the Pacquiao fight, but was still a great trainer and good boxing mind. He would have me work one thing for an entire session. I'm like, yo, let's land that right hand to the body. Okay, that's what we're doing today? I'm like, that's all. He's like, you land five of those in a round, I'm happy. And he would count. Land five of those in a round. He would go, all right, back to, whenever I had a bad round, he'd go, all right, we're going back to round one. It's a jab. Get your rhythm, get your timing, get your distance, get your jab. And I would go back to that, and then I'd win the round, and then I'd get back into the fight. So if they had never done that in the gym, it doesn't matter what Ben said, because Moses was so redlined so early. I saw it as early as round three. I was like, the mouth open, but I could see his eyes. I could see his body language.
He was almost leaping on some of those shots.
Well, no, he was way over his skis, and that's how you see someone's body completely crash the way it did. He pushed himself to the absolute limit. He left on a stretcher out of exhaustion.
Bro, it was those not an scenes injury. Were wild.
Bro, his body was so over the limit. Survival mode.
Boxing is the craziest sport because you enter the ring as the heir apparent. You're the next big thing. You're the next Anthony Joshua in terms of ticket sales. We're comparing you to Mike Tyson. Maybe you're going to go on and fight huge names. I kept names.
Pumping that, those brakes, bro.
I know, but it was out there. Let me just finish my grand point.
Aggravating.
You're walking into the ring as the heir apparent, the next big thing, the great hope, and you leave on a stretcher.
Bad business.
Wild sport.
Like, yeah, but also, you know what the crazy part is? He was not only obviously winning, but he was in control. He was like, control. He was dominating. Oh, yeah. Dominating.
Dude, you see the punch stats? At one point, it was like 45 power shots to one.
Yeah, I mean. And then to just completely gas out and fall apart, like literally coming apart at the seams. And again, me and Paulie, we were calling the fights last night for Pro Box TV over in L.A., and I keep showing him my phone. I'm like, oh my god! I'm like, yo, he's on a stretcher, and he's like,
I don't mean to laugh. I'm not laughing at him on the stretcher. I'm laughing at the absurdity of this.
Yeah, and Paul's like, well, what happened? We're on headset. I can't even see. I have a microphone.
Yeah, I knew you were working. I was sending you. Updates.
I'm doing this. I'm patting my chest like his heart. And I'm breathing hard. And Paul shrugs at me. He goes, shakes his head like, oh, yeah.
That's when I go to the notes app.
He's just exhausted.
I write down, show you the notes app. Oh, that's what happened. I do that here and there. Yes, bro. Like the absurdity of it, the craziness of the sport. But to go way back to what we were just talking about, how Davison probably didn't drill that stuff in him. And we have a little bit of evidence of that by Atama saying that he's never sparred more than 12 rounds. He didn't say, hey, I've never worked on this, but if he says I never sparred more than 12 rounds, I don't want to make too many jumps here. I don't want to jump to too many conclusions here, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they didn't work on those things, Chris, that you just talked about. But Ben Davison is a good trainer.
Very good.
Like I understand he gets a lot of flack because he's cocky, he's young, he's good looking, got great hair. He's an arrogant guy.
But is he?
He's a good trainer.
I don't know. I feel like
there's a lot of people that can't stand the guy. Because you know why? He came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's working with Tyson Fury. He was a soccer coach. Next thing you know, he's working with Tyson Fury. He's working with the best of the best. Mostly jealousy. A little bit of like, this guy's got it all going on for him. He's had some bad losses. He's had some good wins. Just like any trainer out there.
Very good
wins. Yeah, some very good wins. So that's what I mean. He's a good trainer. So it's hard to believe that they didn't work on that stuff. Like, is there something that's missing here? Is it something that we don't know? Is it something where Atama has a crazy ego where he's pushing back on his coaches?
So there's so much there's
we
have that. To know,
and that was the main thing heading into this fight, Chris.
It's hard not to believe the hype when you're 21 years old.
I get that, but I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back. But I'm saying we try to think about every scenario. And I said this is not that crazy of a thing that we talked about in lead up episodes and about Atama, is that there's so much unknown. Like, we don't know exactly what this guy's about. He doesn't do a lot of interviews. We don't know if he's cocky. We don't know if he's a hard puncher. We don't know what happens when shit hits the fan. We simply didn't know. We did kind of say that. And one thing I will pat myself on the back for is I just hate the fact that he was doing two fights a year. He's a two-fight-a-year guy at age 21. What are we doing? This guy should have been fighting 8-10 times. Knocking out cans, fighting the James Bone Crusher Smith types, and knocking everyone out, build up the mystique, build up just the confidence, build up some more stamina. Like, but we're living in a way different age where now he's fighting two times a year. Now he's a pay-per-view attraction. Now he's jumping up the heavyweight rankings into a vacant title fight when the guy doesn't even spar 12 rounds. What are we doing?
This was a fumbling of a very good talent, and I'm very surprised. I know how Frank Warren is very good at a very good promoter, he develops guys. But I think they got pushed because of how things got moved with Usyk and the belts being released and opportunities to be. I think they fell in love with the idea of being the second youngest heavyweight champion and, right, and pushing this fight, the marketing of it. When everyone's on the gravy train, everyone's hyping him up. And the hype gets to you too. You know, you're 21 years old and you're busting everybody up and you're, you know, stopping your sparring partners and everyone's talking about how great you are and you're going to be the next youngest champion next to Mike Tyson. Oh, you're like Mike Tyson. Like, Mike Tyson's everyone's hero. And now you got people comparing you to him. But also, he's 21. But it didn't just bother, it didn't just affect him. It affected the people around him. It affected the people who know better. It affected the coaches, the promoters, the managers, that they all believed the hype. And guess what? You met Filip Hrgović. He did not believe the hype.
Unfortunately, he said it all week. Haven't got to him yet.
Yeah, he said it all week. And then he goes in there and showed it. So
Another thing Atama said that was really foolish in the lead up is that he says having a good chin is not something to brag about.
Well, no fighter with a good chin has ever said that. But
bro, talk about aging poorly. Cold takes exposed the Twitter.
But honestly,
account.
I mean, at this point, you know, we're pouring on the poor guy, you know, after his loss. But it's like, where do you how heavy are his takes? He's 21 and has.
Just the two of them that have come out so far. I have never sparred more than 12 rounds, and having a good chin is nothing to be proud about. That's how he lost the fight. That's the story of the fight. Before we get to Hrgović, because I do want to obviously talk about the winner of this fight, even though he lost every minute of that fight, and it was such a weird fight to dissect. How does Moses Itama bounce back? Because he's at the precipice of a title shot. Now he has to go way backwards and figure out his stamina. How is Frank Warren Queensberry going to build Itama back up?
Really tough because, again, I'm going to go right back to Klitschko and Brewster. And once they figured out his nutritional training pacing for a big guy situation and the rebuild and the time it took to do that, and then you get one of the most dominant heavyweight runs of in all of history. The problem is Klitschko was a really good amateur and had a lot of experience. Itama does not. I'm always going back to that. I'm going to always go back to the fact that he doesn't have a deep amateur pedigree. He does not have a lot of fights. This is going to take a long time to rebuild because you can't take another risk and be like, he's ready. No, he's not ready. He wasn't ready this time. He's going to be way less ready. You know, he needs a long rebuild where he's literally going to have to. He's going to have to go old school. I think old school mowing down.
What they should have done for the last 2 years?
Correct. Because, again, we're forgetting about amateurs. We miss talking about amateurs all the time. And this is coming from a fighter with no amateur fights. I have no amateur boxing fights. Amateurs matter. And you don't have a deep amateur pedigree? All right, cool. You got to cut your teeth in the pros, which is really difficult to do. And they didn't do that. They skipped over it because he looked so goddamn good. Now they're going to have to go back. You know, he needs 10 fights next year.
Well, that's not going to happen.
No, it's not. So, I don't know. I don't know if Moses gets back.
Okay, the flip side of that is that he looks spectacular. His punch placement is absurd. His hand speed is unbelievable. His power is good enough. It's not devastating power, and it's more about a placement thing. The flip side is that he looked phenomenal. He was controlling this fight. He was winning this fight until his body shut off. So you say it's going to be a long road back, but the talent is there.
But the confidence.
Like, how much of a fix is that?
It's
more the stamina.
No, it's the psyche. The stamina you can fix. It's the psyche. He got broken by another man. Bro, that's really hard to come back from. That is going to take time.
I wonder, like, so next year, 2027, is he in there with a top 10 heavyweight?
I mean, we got to see how long he's going to be out. The guy left in a stretcher.
Yeah, I know. We don't. This is what I do, at least. I know you're a fighter now. I mean, you're a media guy, but you once were a fighter. I always look to what's next. Okay, so he's not going to fight, obviously, this year. But let's just say he's going to come back, make a full recovery, which I think he will.
Yeah, he will.
Next year. Back. Are we looking at, like, more of the Jermaine Franklin types? Or even below that? Does he look to get right back
in there? Definitely below that. I would say below that. And then
below that, right? He should go below, like a rung below Franklin, obviously. Get your – just. But that's going to be a quick blowout. That's just – what's that going to do for him?
Well, no. I mean, if you get a guy like Franklin who actually shows up in shape and at 20 pounds overweight the way he did this one, like you get a guy like an actual quality version of Franklin, that's the kind of guy you need. You got to get a durable guy who's going to be in there, who's going to be tricky, and he's going to survive, and he's going to want to win too. That's another thing. He needs to fight guys who want to win. Like Erkovich wanted to win. He came in. He came in shape. He's talking shit. He wanted to win. He had a lot to prove, and he wanted to be world champion, and now he is. So how many of those guys before wanted to win? Did Dillian White really want to win? Did Franklin really want to win coming in as heavy as he was? No, I don't think so. You got to have resistance. We had never seen resistance. And granted, the resistance that Ergovic put up was mostly the resistance of his chin. But he was there. Didn't take much, but he was there.
That's it. He was there. Ergovic was there. I personally think Altama will be a heavyweight champion. I think he will bounce back. I think he's got way too much talent.
The landscape is wide open too.
Landscape is wide open. I think they can. There's so much money invested in him that he can get the best nutrition and the best training.
They'll fix that.
Maybe they'll switch trainers, coaches. There's going to be a lot more coming out from with that, with Davison and all that. I do think he'll bounce back because the skills are sublime. It's just the mental stuff and, like you said, the psyche. We'll see.
That's going to be the rebuild
for Hrgović. Like, an unbelievable iron chin. I don't care what Thomas says. That's a huge part of heavyweight boxing. Still had a good jab. The jab kept him in those early rounds. Like, he was getting hit with everything, and the only thing he was landing were jabs for the first, like, four or five rounds. Once Thomas slowed down, Hrgović started to land that right and started going to the body really well. Like, it wasn't an offensive masterpiece from Hrgović, and it's almost to the point where it's like Thomas just fell apart. Hrgović, I don't want to say Hrgović didn't win the fight, because he did. But like I'm kind of struggling to find some major key moments for him outside of just withstanding insane punishment.
It was a survive and move on kind of situation. You had a guy who was imploding during the fight, and you know he was there, and he had the balls, the chin, the balls, the heart, and the experience and wherewithal to be like, I feel, he said it. He's like, I feel this guy. He's starting to go. Like I said, I saw it in round three. I'm like, we got a lot of, if he can't really get this guy out of here, because even the knockdown to me was like, all right, it was a little cuffing right hook behind the ear. Yep. I mean, not like a killer shot. He wasn't really that hurt. I'm like, oh, if you can just hang in there with this kid and just let him gas himself out, which looks like he is already. And I didn't realize, you told me during the Franklin fight that he actually spoke in the corner. I didn't see that. Where he talked about his gas tank a little bit right before he stopped him. That gave me an inclination. Oh, by the way, we didn't talk about the press conference. The slap.
Oh, dude.
I told Paulie, we're on location in LA in the Pro Box, and I saw, first of all, Itama pushing Moses, pushing Ergovic.
Didn't like that.
Was a super, super lame. Super lame to do that. This poor, this giant man gets pushed off, even a 6-inch ledge, he hurts his knee. Okay, fights off, dude. Yeah, that was dumb. But also, like, that's not cool to do. Push a guy from behind. Anyway. But then Ergovic gets up and slaps him with a right hand from around the guy's head. From half a body length away and lands it clean.
Yeah,
there clean was it. No response from Italma. I go to Paulie, I'm like, hey dude, remember when Caleb Plant was 6 inches away and tried to smack Canelo? And he pulled and countered immediately. I'm like, that's how you're supposed to react. That's what you want to see. Not just sit there and get cracked on your jaw. And I was like, this guy is going to find him.
Yeah, he talked a lot of shit, Talma. He shoves him, gets bitch slapped, and then leaves on a stretcher. That's what I mean. It's a very humbling sport.
Psyche.
Very humbling sport. I did not see this coming. I was shocked. I put out a reaction video with my dad. I was able to watch the fight with my dad, who's seen every heavyweight fight since the 70s. And he was shocked himself, but you know, he saw stuff too. He was like fifth round. He yells out like he's slowing down. Like he saw it too. But yeah, not a good couple of days for most.
We gotta pump the brakes, guys. We get too excited.
Listen, like I get it. This happens in all sports. We get excited. We're fans. Short for fanatical. We want to see something great. We want to see greatness. We want to see a phenom. We want to see a lot of us missed out on Mike Tyson. I got the tail end of his career. Not saying this guy's Mike Tyson, but you've seen the comparisons. You want to see greatness. We get excited, especially in a sport like boxing, where we desperately need stars and we desperately need greatness. But it's boxing. It's not basketball. You don't play a game. You don't have a close game and then you lose and you come back next season. No, you have a devastating night at the office where you're taken off on a stretcher and we're questioning if you're ever going to bounce back again.
Yeah, and your life changes. Your face changes. Your brain changes. Your everything changes. Like, I mean, yeah, this is the hurt business. And like you said, like, this ain't a game. You're not just coming back the next night and being like, oh, I can get that back. No, I got 6 months, a year, you know, and maybe even longer, if ever. I don't know. This is we got to pump the brakes, but like so many people were so high on it. Like, you know, I talked to Robert Garcia multiple times a week, and he's like, I think he's the next thing. He is going to be the future of the heavyweight division. He's getting me excited. I'm like, all right, Robert knows what the hell he's looking at. I'm like, I see some things, but I'm always worried about how moving guys fast. I know how hard it is to be a champion. I was in the gym. This was during one of my, you know, quote unquote, first retirements when I was out of the ring for years due to promotional issues. But I was still training really hard in Brooklyn. I was still sparring with world-class guys. I was sparring with Richard Comey. I was sparring with Richardson Hitchens. I was working in camp with Danny Jacobs. I was sparring with Danny Jacobs as well, Sergey Derevchenko, working with all these guys. And we would do this really hard conditioning session called Box and Rumble. And it was one of the first couple weeks I actually joined the team in Brooklyn. And me and Richard are on the same bag, and we're doing the Boxing Rumble, which is it's just 100% all effort conditioning workout on the bag, and just like anything like that, it's as hard as you want to make it. You can be a little bitch and you can go, or you can just really dig down and go in. And I'm going, and Coach Andre Rozier always loved me because I pushed hard, really hard all the time, and. Richard asked me one day after a session, he's like, oh, champ. He's like, you know, because he told me he was a fan, and we sparred, whatever. We're good friends, good guy. And he's like, champ. He was like, what do you have anything coming up? And I'm like, nah. I'm like, I'm in a contract dispute, man. I'm like, I got nothing anywhere. I have no idea where this is gonna be. He's like, oh. He's like, well, why are you training so hard? And I was like, I mean, it's the only way I know how to train, but also. You know, I want to be champion again. I'm gonna come back eventually. And he goes, yeah. He's like, yeah, but you don't have a date. I'm like, and I go, Richard. I grab him and I go, however hard you think it is to be a world champion, it's way harder. And he just like stopped and looked at me. He's like, and I'm like, it's way harder. And we saw that. We saw that last night with Moses Itama because we all were. The coronation was on. This is gonna be the next guy. And he had a guy in front of him that, you know, for all intents and purposes, all of us experts, quote unquote, were saying, yeah, he's gonna get by this guy. He's gonna be the next youngest world champion. Hey, guess what? It's not that easy. Being a world champion is really, really hard. So we got to give credit to the champions, and we got to pump the brakes a little bit. We get too excited over our own skis as experts when we see the next coming. We get excited, like you said. But listen, it's really hard to win a title fight. It takes superhuman efforts, which is what we talked about earlier. Oh, he's human. Yeah. We're all human, but it takes superhuman efforts to be a champion. And we didn't get that from Itama.
Do you think because – I think Itama believed that too. He was just going to – my skills will take me through this and I'll be fine, 21-year-old.
We both said it. We all said it.
But do you Everybody think because it. You trained so hard because you weren't blessed with the same skill set of a Moses Itama? Like you had to work for everything, so you have to work harder. Could that be a reason why we see someone like Itama just kind of cut corners?
You can say that, but like, how bad do you want to be as good as your potential is? Like, Roy Jones Jr. worked really hard. He had more talent than anyone. Physical gifts.
That's what I mean. You got to have it the both, like the right. skills, so, and then the work and the drive is why is the all time greats.
I call that the Michael Jordan or the Kobe Bryant formula. You have all of the physical gifts and the talent, and you're supposed to be that. Plus, you have the work ethic and the discipline.
Right.
Roy Jones Jr. is that in our industry. He has all those physical gifts that are crazy off the charts. Sugar Ray Leonard, another one. Insane athlete. Still works super hard. Mayweather, I think he's a little bit like, yeah, no, you know,
you don't have like the punching ability, but no, that guy, I mean, all the money in the world,
the effort, still training. The effort that he put in, his discipline, his effort, his dedication. When you have that, when you have the Floyd, Roy, Sugar gene, the Jordan, Kobe gene, where you have the talent, the physicality, and then the work ethic on top of it, that's when you get all-time greatness. And we were looking at our talent, like the guy who's supposed to take over and have the all-time greatness. That dude, that 12-round comment is going to haunt him.
Unreal.
And it's going to haunt his legacy.
Unless he comes back and erases it. But I'm very interested how he comes back, because we've kind of never seen something like this before. Or I can't remember a time where we've seen a fighter, number one, shut off like that. Yeah. While up on all the cards, so young, so skilled, in a position that he probably didn't deserve, like we talked about. How do you rebuild? I'm just so curious. And Frank Warren has seen a lot of boxing, more than us. So we're going to see how they rebuild this kid. Because I do think he'll be back because of the skills. And he wasn't knocked out cold. There wasn't a devastating injury. There's the
psyche. No, he wasn't getting beat. He wasn't crazy, getting outworked. Man. He insane. Wasn't getting outpunched. He didn't get caught. He just literally ran out of gas
in like the most blatant way. Such a roller coaster, like I said, too.
Even if he ran out of gas and just like literally puttered over the finish line and lost like a decision, we've seen that. And it'd be like,
guy fall backwards.
Like too that. Much too soon. No, never seen a guy completely fall apart.
Oh, and he landed it right. Did you see that one sequence where he fell backwards?
Well, he was jumping around and he lands this beautiful right hand right on the jaw.
Boom, he's got heart. He's like, I'll give him.
He was trying.
Like, wasn't smart, but he was still trying to the very end. I'll give him that. Hrgović has a ton of heart. Hrgović Frank Sanchez supposedly is next. Hrgović wanted no part of that. His post-fight interview, Hrgović, was one of the best ones I've seen in a very long time, talking about the chin, throwing stuff in Moses' face, but also giving him credit and throwing him a lot of respect. They bring up Frank Sanchez. He goes, I want no part of Frank Sanchez. Not I want no part of him. I just don't want to fight him. That means nothing to me. I want Dubois. I want Caballo. I want the unifications. Thanked his late Very father smart. Who passed away. He was firing on all cylinders. He wins. He's now the IBF heavyweight champion. Obviously, the Frank Sanchez fight is contractually there. He can say he doesn't want to do that fight, but that's next. He doesn't have that title unless Frank Sanchez steps aside. So we've got that. We have Dubois versus Wardley, too, official. Did you catch that face-off between Dubois and Wardley? Did you hear what Dubois said to Wardley?
I did not.
Oh, my God, bro.
So Dubois, his quotes are...
There's an all-timer. So they bring him into the ring. They bring them both into the ring, Dubois and Wardley. They had the microphone. Dubois goes, let me get some of that face-to-face shit, boy. Give me some of that face-to-face shit, boy. And Wardley is, like, stunned. He starts laughing. He's like, I've never heard that sentence uttered in my life.
No one has, and certainly Wardley, because Wardley's funny because, like, he's not from our world. Like, he's not a boxing guy. He's just like a big athlete, cool guy. Like, that's what I get from him.
And Dubois is not from this world, and he's just an alien.
And Dubois is the opposite. He's just not a cool guy.
I'm trying to pull so
I'm
it
sure,
up.
I'm sure he's a great guy, but, like, yeah, he's just the way he puts phrases together. It's like old man Dan when you're with the Twitch streamers.
What's up, my fellow youths? All right, let me know if you can hear this.
Give me some of that face-to-face shit, boy.
Yeah, perfect. Face-to-face shit, boy.
Oof. They're That's fighting it's again. Like,
what is that movie with John Cena and the blonde comedian, a female?
I know. With John LeBron's Cena's in it.
LeBron's in it. Yeah, LeBron was actually really funny in that. But they're in the movie theater, and he gets into the argument with the other comedian guy, and he's saying all these like off the wall like attacks. That's like Dubois. Dude, I will Dubois. Enter you.
John Cena. John Cena. All this weird shit. That's Dubois. He definitely practiced that too in front of the mirror before you got there. I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna give you some of that.
Listen, it came off. Shit, it came off crisp. It came off very crisp. It was it. if it was rehearsed, then it worked. But it's just the wrong words in the wrong order.
October 17th, we get Dubois Wardley 2. I think we're gonna get Hrgović Sanchez next. I'm surprised. Well, since it was a vacant title shot, I believe there was no rematch clause with Atalma and Hrgović. Because I'd like to see Atalma and Hrgović run it back. Even though I don't think Atalma would do that. Yeah,
not
Atalma
right
probably
away.
Wouldn't not want right. to do that anyway. So
I'd like to see Hrgović and Cabell.
Hrgović and Cabell did. I think he came into the ring, or he pointed at him. He was there.
I think he said, "You're next." He said, "You're next."
He pointed. Yeah, at he Cabell. Did point at a bunch of different people. He was and very said, excited next, afterwards. Yeah. How about Keith?
I like that fight.
How about Keith Connolly, your former manager? Oh my goodness! What a year this guy's having.
He has. I mean, I remember when he first signed Hrgović. He loves Hrgović. He just thinks he's an early sign.
That's not like he just like he's been with him for a while.
Yeah, well, he's been through the worst too, and that's another thing. Like Keith, when Keith believes in you, he sticks with you. But he's always really liked his personality. He thinks he's obviously he's talented. He is ups and downs like a real manager should be. Because Keith is very much he's very personally involved with his fighters. So you see that.
Yeah, Hrgović dealt with a lot. He had the losses. Obviously, he had a lot of the political bullshit where he was. Mandatory interim, maybe not interim, but mandatory top of the food chain.
Outside the bubble boogeyman for a while.
Right. No one gave him the shot because you're not gaining anything by fighting him. The typical, like, this guy's really scary. He's good, but doesn't generate any financial upside. So that guy's going to get stepped on in boxing from a small country, like he said all week long. Never got the had to do it the hard way. And yeah, Connolly was with him from the beginning, but now Connolly obviously has Berlanga. He's got Teofimo. He's got Conor Benn in 2 weeks against Ryan Garcia. Definitely the best manager in boxing. Does a good job. Yeah. Fighters love him. He's a good guy. Saw him at the airport.
Promoters don't love him.
Well, it's a good thing. You don't want the promoters to like
you. Yeah, exactly. You're on the side of the fighters, which a lot of managers...
I want my manager to go
a lot of managers. A lot of managers are pretty much on the side of the promoters.
It's more of a cosign that this guy is the best manager in boxing, if Eddie Hearn hates him.
No question.
So, yeah, that's the heavyweight division. That was an absolute stunner. We'll see what happens there. Let's go over to Pro Box. You were there calling the fight. Lester Martinez, main event. With a very, very nice win, very exciting fight, back and forth, good action, good crowd, good production. I threw down my $5, $2 extra, Chris.
You did it on your iPhone? Come on, man! It's so easy on your laptop. You're on an Apple laptop right now. You could have done it right now.
I wanted to get the screenshot tweeted.
But you know what's so crazy? Apple iPhone takes 40%. They add a 40% on top. And 40% on top. $2 to a $5 bill. They add $2. That's 40% of the bill just to Apple. We don't see that. That's why Apple's Apple.
That's why we're all peasants and they're taking over.
And my phone is listening to me right now. I'm probably going to get charged.
Fuck you, Apple. Get a BlackBerry. Good fight, though. Good main event. What the heck happened in the Najee Lopez fight? What was that?
Well, I thought both the stoppages were weird. I thought the Plantic fight should have gone on. I don't know why they stopped the fight. Talking about a Croatian with a great chin. He was getting hit with absolute bombs all night long. And he's a little bit of an awkward guy, so it's like you can kind of tell. Is he hurt or is he just moving weird? I thought he was fine. I think the fight should have went on. He adamantly fought the stoppage. Does the stoppage come a little bit later? Maybe, but there wasn't much time left. I think it should have been allowed to go, but I think Lester had already established that he was the better, cleaner fighter, and he looked really, really good. A little bit of questioning about Lester's power. Is he really have that kind of power at the world-class level? But also, we don't know, because Plantek is super tough and has never been stopped, never lost. The Najee Lopez stoppage, that was a debacle. That was one of the most botched, double-botched calls I've ever seen.
And so with replay.
For people at home who didn't see what happened, Najee is in a tactical Cobra versus Cobra fencing counterattack fight. I mean, this is like Stratego every round. Very, very tight. Depending on what side of the ring you're on is who you're going to pick the round for. Very, very close. Starts to peel away a little bit, being a little more active. Gets a tongue lashing in the corner from trainer Mark Ferrey. Starts picking up. Starts to kind of pull away a little bit. But very much so, Carrillo is in there. A southpaw counterpuncher with big power. And out of nowhere, Nacho Lopez with one of the most brilliant counter body shots I've ever seen. Sick uppercut, slips, boom, rips, bang, hits the solar plexus. And Carrillo, there was no delayed reaction. It was immediately to the floor, like screaming, rolling kind of thing. Ref calls it a low blow. And at the time, like, we didn't, like, it happened so fast. We were like, oh, it was out of nowhere. It was literally out of nowhere. And we were like, oh, man. Like, oh, man. And I was like, I don't, that kind of looked, me and Paulie, like, that looked like a botch. We get the replay. Did not even touch the belt line. So was that. One of the most beautiful counter uppercut to the body you will ever see. So they keep going. He gets, a, you know, multiple minutes to kind of recover from that. They keep going. The round ends. And Mark Ferre, being really smart, coaches at home, pay attention to this, loses his goddamn mind in the corner. And goes, you just took that, you know, that body shot away from him. You took that knockdown from him. You took the stoppage from him. Boom. California is a replay state. They go and they check it. Call it a KO.
Wait. After the fact?
After the fact.
Which, like, how much time from the
bro, the round continued. I've it was in between the before. Rounds.
I was watching. I stopped away for botched. A second at that point.
This is why I had to explain it. Because if you were.
What the fuck? Like in
yes,
so in baseball, bad. you challenge, but you have to challenge it right away. You
immediately,
have to,
yes.
Like, yeah, you have there's a grace period of maybe like 15 seconds where you could challenge a play. I didn't even know there were challenges in boxing. I didn't even know you could do that. I didn't know
Dan.
So the trainer went to the commission and was like, you guys messed this up. And the commission actually listened and said, we have replay. We're going to use
it. And then they reviewed it and they called it a stoppage.
The commission's like, hey, we set up this whole table. We might as well use it.
So let's go step by step. So the punch goes, he gets hit. The ref does this. He does the lower level clear, like stop the time. Because overhead means the fight's over. Everyone in the arena, for some reason, and around the ring, takes the referee's hand.
Yeah, but the ref gesture. Didn't move until the fighter. I see bad refs. This is a bad refing. They react off of what the fighter's reaction. So this guy.
No, he didn't do that. No.
He didn't?
No.
He thought it was a low blow originally, the ref.
Which is crazy because he was on the side of the punch, didn't see it. But he calls it a low blow and he does the wave off of the time, like not a knockdown. Everyone jumps in the ring like the fight's over. The ring cart girl standing in the middle of the ring waiting for the.
They don't know any better.
I know. She's completely just space in between the ears. But the corners, everybody jumps in the ring. Cameramen. But the ref is not taking control of the situation. He's literally just dealing with the fighter and being like, no, calling off the time, calling off the knockdown. Najee's on the ropes with his hands up like, I won the fight, which is actually what should have happened. But then they continue fighting the rest of the round. There was short time left in the round. They think, you know, it was another 20 seconds or so. They finished the round. Najee tries to follow up, and Carrillo's still hurt, still huffing and puffing. And they go into the corner, and then Mark Ferre demands the replay, and they call it a KO.
What's the ruling there? What's the protocol there? Like, I guess you can do that.
You can't call a KO. That's absurd.
No, you can't. No, in terms of, like, you time can't elapse, I feel like. The minute you restart the round, I feel like any challenges.
The fight continues.
You can't go backwards then at that point.
I agree. So you have to live by the call. If it was a bad call by the referee, which it was, the initial bad call, you live by the call.
So a bad call by the ref, the right result.
But maybe. I don't know. Because if I'm Carrillo, I'm going to say, well, I would have got up. You know, similar to like the Usyk and Dubois debacle with the body shot. It's like, oh, I would have got up. Oh, he stayed down for this long. I was like, oh, I didn't have to get up. I would have got up. Because Carrillo can always say that. Like, wow, now I have a KO loss. Like, I would have got up. Maybe it would have stopped me later, but you cannot just guess that was going to happen.
So Lester wins, and he looks pretty good. Like you said, there are some questions. There's questions about every 168-pounder today. But he's definitely in the mix. I know that Belmac was calling out Canelo after. I don't think he'll get that. Pacheco, Lester, Southern California.
Pacheco was there.
That's a good fight.
Pacheco was there.
We got to get these guys fighting. Like the sixth versus fifth guy needs to fight at 168. Yeah. I understand Canelo's in this division still, and everyone's gunning for him because of the monetary advantages that come along with it. But like, these guys eventually have to start fighting each other. Lester and Pacheco would be a banger.
Yes, and Pacheco, before he fought Aleem, which is who Lester had defeated earlier in the year, he said, I got to beat him better than Lester, and he did. Like that, it was an open challenge where he actually mentioned his name. So obviously they're on the radar. Obviously he was there for ringside for the fight. So yeah, that fight makes a ton of sense. I think with the popularity of Lester Martinez in the Southern California area, who, I don't know if you remember, Diego Pacheco said some disparaging words about Mexican fighters.
He did?
And caught a lot. Oh, yeah. Caught a lot.
Puerto Rican versus a Mexican. Mexican?
Exactly. Pacheco's a Mexican, but he said those disparaging words about Mexican fighters and you know, their level compared to what he is. And he got a lot of flack.
Why the hell would he say that?
Wild. So Mexican fans they love Lester. The Mexican fan base, Southern California, loves Lester.
So we've got the Guatemalans and the Mexicans on his side?
Yeah. Meanwhile, there's a couple million Guatemalans in
it's good
LA,
crowd.
By the way.
It's loud in there.
Yeah, I think we had 7,000.
It's considering what it is. Like, you know, it's a big card, but it's not like you're one of your major promoters. So
at all.
Shout out to ProBox. I like this. I hope it was a success. I threw down my $7. I want my $2. That's an Apple thing.
I'll get you a. What do you get for $2 these days?
Nothing.
A gumball.
I think like when I get my latte, they add $1.50 on just for the oat milk. So like a shot of oat milk. Thanks, bro. Thanks for that shot of oat milk.
I get you a shot of oat milk. No, the gate was good. We'll find out about the subs and the subscriptions. But I don't know.
I subscribed. I tweeted out my receipt.
A lot of big time people did.
Said, you know what, I will now too. So I
Mauricio Suleiman was posting about it. Robert Garcia, Bam. Did you see Bam posted about it?
That's awesome.
Man, it's good. It's good stuff.
Gotta support ProBox. Gotta support
people at ProBox.
All the promoters. So that was a good showing. We end the show. Chantel Cameron defeated Michaela Mayer. Good fight. 10-round, 2-minute sprint. Chantel Cameron is now a champion at 154. Has wins over Mayer, Katie Taylor, and Jessica McCaskill over 3 different weight classes. She's a very unassuming fighter. She's just you wouldn't even know.
Is she?
I interviewed her.
Outside the ring. I thought you meant. Okay, yeah.
No, in the ring, she's fiery. In the ring, she's fiery, yeah. And she's very good. Obviously, I think she's one of the best women boxers ever. Like with that resume, and it's not a really big history of women's boxing. But outside of the ring, I remember I was interviewing her at one of these MVP shoots, and it was like pulling teeth. She said, "I don't like doing interviews. I hate doing this. Whatever." She's really good. She
got pretty fiery with Michaela. Michaela's a really good talker, and she was going neck and neck with her.
Yeah, tough. It was a really close fight. It was like a 6-4. You know, it could have went either way, draw. But I thought Cameron won. They landed similar punches, but with these 2-minute rounds, and I think you would agree with me, these 2-minute rounds, you almost have to. The person that comes forward for the most part, like has those few moments in the fight, is most likely going to win. And when I think of this fight, very close. But when I close my eyes and think of it, I think of Cameron taking the fight to Mayer more than Mayer was taking it to Cameron.
It's literally one punch around.
And a lot of that's what Katie Taylor mastered. It was a couple shots hold, round over.
You remember one punch in the round because you're like, it looked like a lot of the same stuff. I was like, yeah, but you know what? Chantel did land that one right hand that popped Michaela. That's the round. There were rounds literally where I'm watching. I'm watching, and then like there was one good punch. I'm like, okay, that's the round because in 2 minutes there's not that much time, and these women are good. I was really impressed with Chantel. I expected Michaela. I'm a big fan of Michaela Mayer. I've said it on the show before. I really like the way that she fights stylistically. I think she's one of the best women in the world. She absolutely is. But Chantel Cameron had a brilliant game plan. Super, super smart. She came in, stayed super tight guard, stayed low, and was putting pressure. But she's a good puncher. She's a harder puncher than Michaela Mayer. You could tell like her punches had more gravitas to it. It was a little more behind it. And Michaela's a boxer, and she got dragged into a fight at times. That was what won it for Chantel. She got her to stand in front of her and trade. And Chantel just has these really short punches. She has heavier hands. And I'm also looking at that like just from a ring general standpoint. I'm like, oh no, you're fighting her fight. She got you to do that. That's in a close round. I'm going with the person like, oh, who's fighting who's getting the other person to fight their fight? And I thought Cameron did that really well.
Yeah.
Still close fight. But, you know, I hate going against Michaela, but, yeah, I had Cameron win it, too.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll run it back because it was really close. Mayer won. She was going to try to fight Shields. I don't see Cameron trying to fight Shields.
No.
Maybe. I don't know.
She might. Actually, she might.
You never know. Women's boxing. Anyone can fight anyone. Caroline Dubois won on the co-main event, went 10 rounds with Amelia Moore, who's went, I think, had four pro fights. I tweeted this out afterwards, and got, people were like, what are you talking about, Dan? Like, Dubois, I would, like, she's very hard on herself. I guarantee if you asked her, she wasn't that happy with the performance. She got the win. She looked good. Baumgartner is now at 135. Baumgartner has to beat Turhan. That's not an easy, it's not a walk in the park.
No,
at all.
It's a hard fight.
But the thing with Baumgartner, her last fight against Bo-Ri Shin, Baumgartner threw 95 punches in the ninth round and 105 in the 10th. Fight highs. And I tweeted, like, Baumgartner has a good engine. And people were coming after me like, oh, are you crazy? Like, the thing about Baumgartner, she fades.
She does. She does now. She has a good engine now. She didn't.
Now. That's what I meant. Now. Like, yeah. I'm judging off her last fight. Like, you don't throw fight highs in the ninth and 10th round and have a bad engine. And those are three-minute rounds. Dubois has never fought three-minute rounds. I'm starting to think that Baumgartner can beat Dubois. I'm changing my thought process on the fight. I just think Baumgartner has just been a little more battle-tested than Dubois.
Oh, no, there's no question. She has way more experience. She's been with better competition.
Three-minute rounds, too.
Three-minute rounds, and she's gotten over that hump because she used to fade. Listen, we can't not say it. She did fail a drug test.
No, she definitely did at one point.
No, she did fail a drug test as well. So,
of course.
Yeah, I mean, she was exonerated or cleared, however the hell that works, because this is boxing. But we're not going to not asterisk, you know, the conversation about that. But she did used to have a gas tank problem, and it showed up a lot. It was not just like one time, because she did that one time. She blamed like her menstrual cycle, but like it was more than just one time, because she's super explosive. She fights a lot more like a counterpunching male. Like
she
a guy who
really
like,
good in that last
who
fight.
Controls the distance and fires an explosive. She scores knockouts too. She knocked out Terry Harper in
yeah, but hasn't
crazy
knocked
fashion.
Out since then though.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who. That's a 50-50 fight for me.
I'm leaning Baumgartner because of.
I think I've always leaned Baumgartner because of experience.
The sexy pick is like I'm picking Dubois. She's, you know. Like,
yeah,
people think of her as this killer. She's not really a killer either. She's a good technical fighter.
When you step up, though, I mean, because Amelia Moore, who she fought last night, big amateur, did a lot of the FPL, PFL, right? Professional Fighters League? Team Boxing League. TBL. Did a lot of that. Big amateur, bunch of national titles, whatever. Doesn't have a lot of pro experience, obviously. But she handled herself well. I mean, Dubois looked good. Dubois is good. She's very athletic. I think her and Baumgartner is a great fight. But again, Baumgartner's got to get past
Turhan.
Turhan. She's nasty.
She's a power punching Turkish force. Crazy Turk.
Turkish power.
That's our episode. We'll be back on Thursday. Got Andy Ruiz. Get some more answers from Hrgović. More answers from Atalma. A lot going on there. This story is not over. There's a lot more to unfold.
Developing
with Atama's health, his corner, his psyche. Filip Hrgović definitely earned that win. What an unbelievable heavyweight. Heavyweights are awesome. Just gonna end the
heavyweights
show
are awesome.
I tweeted it out. Awesome. I was like, boxing has pissed me off this year. I wanted so many more bigger fights, but not you, big heavyweights. Not you, big glorious bastards. You guys are the best.
You meaty men throwing heat. God,
you guys really are the best. You're in a different class, a different world, a different stratosphere. God bless heavyweight boxing. God bless America. God bless Inside Boxing Live. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourself at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.